Welcome, dear listener, to the Coastal Magic Podcast, Elves, Fairies, and Dragons at the Beach. I'm Melanie McCree, your host and author of all short stories featured on the podcast. In today's episode, young Alex Fisher lives a life of idyllic, if isolated, peace. His only contact with the outside world is books, television, and the internet. Until an unwelcome visitor destroys Alex's world, and he learns he has a terrible gift, and a secret he must never disclose to anyone. And now, our story, A Contract in Blood, Part 1. Alex Fisher grew up in the middle of nowhere. He was 10 when he found out why. The first 9 years of his life had been peaceful. He had his grandmother and his books and computer games, and that was enough. Once a week, Grandma Kathy drove into town to drop stuff off and pick stuff up. On those days, Alex stayed home to guard the house. Grandma Kathy never invited anyone over to visit. She said people only wanted to see the farm because they were nosy about things that weren't their concern. Grandma Kathy raised Spanish goats, and when Alex got tall enough, he helped out. The goats had horns the same shape that geese make when they fly, and fluffy, straight hair that was black in some spots and tan and white in others. And like all goats, they had an attitude problem. That was one of the best things about goats. Spanish goats did well even in the Arizona summer heat. Grandma Kathy sold goat hair and milk and homemade cheese and sometimes baby goats. Most of what Alex ate was either grown in the garden behind the farmhouse or manufactured by a goat. When he needed clothes, Grandma Kathy picked some up for him at the Goodwill. And she handled his education, too, because she decided that he should be homeschooled. They were private people. All the same, most days, Alex was content, living on the farm with the chickens and the goats and the two horses, Barney and Sugar. Now and again, Grandma Kathy would say the code word, which was alfalfa, and that meant Alex should go to the root cellar and hide in the corner until she told him it was safe to come out. That was for practice, just in case bad people showed up. A bad person did show up a few weeks after Alex's 10th birthday, but it was while Grandma Kathy was away. Alex was out weeding the garden in the evening, listening to the goats complain and enjoying the breeze that had sprung up. He was wondering when Grandma Kathy would be home from the grocery store. She'd promised to bring back a watermelon. They could have hot dogs and watermelon and maybe get out the TV trays and eat while they watched a movie. That's when something inside Alex woke up. Goosebumps rose on his skin despite the heat. His throat went dry. He was standing in the middle of the squash patch, but his eyes kept showing him other places. A gravel road, a mile marker, a wide, flat distance with a stubble of sagebrush, then the squashes, then a well, a long barn, doors hanging wide, the goats inside it lying on the straw and panting to cool themselves, their black and tan tails flipping irritably. Then the squashes. A garden. A blue-eyed, black-haired, scarecrowish boy in old jeans, the waist cinched in with a leather belt. That's me, Alex thought, and dizziness hit, sending him sprawling. Wow, a woman said. I've never seen one of you before. You shine like a star, kiddo. Alex tried to focus his eyes. The world was flipping and flipping like it was wound on a reel. But at last, his vision cleared, and he saw who had spoken. She looked like somebody's mother. She was wearing a pair of loose-legged shorts and a button-up, short-sleeved pink blouse, and her hair was pulled back in a ponytail. Her sunglasses had rhinestones in the corners, and her sandals were a little ragged around the straps, like they were her favorites, and she planned to wear them until they fell apart. The woman took off her sunglasses and smiled at him. She had red eyes and fangs. Alex had never seen a vampire in real life. He'd never seen any fairy kind in real life. He couldn't find his voice. couldn't move his feet. Even his lungs weren't working right. "You know," she mused, "originally I was planning to drain whoever lived here and then hole up for a while. But you..." She ruffled his bangs, and he flinched. "If I kept you, I'd never have to worry about losing my mind." "I don't understand," Alex said. The words came out all choppy. His teeth were chattering, clicking together like marbles in a bag. "Huh. You really don't, do you? Nobody told you." The woman dragged her fingernail down his cheek, humming to herself. "No," she said on a sigh. "I think you'd figure it out." She wrapped her hands behind his neck and yanked him toward her. It was so fast, Alex barely understood what was happening. He saw her lips peel back, saw her fangs bared, saw her face descending. "Stop!" Alex shouted. That thing inside him was still awake. It seemed to flow out of him, a light bright and fizzing as a white sparkler, and it surrounded the vampire and sank into her. "Get off me!" Alex shouted, and the light poured out faster. The vampire threw herself backward and crab-walked away from him. Now she was the one who looked terrified. "I'll go," she begged, her voice trembling. "You'll never see me again. I promise." "You should know how it feels to get bitten," Alex said. His head was pounding. He barely knew what he was saying. "You should have all the blood get taken out of you." The vampire screamed. For the rest of his life, Alex would remember exactly what happened next. Every detail, with perfect clarity. The vampire dug her nails into her throat until blood streamed down her neck and stained her shirt red. She dug her nails in deeper until she couldn't scream anymore. Tears spilled from her eyes and slid over her temples to dampen her hair. And her eyes begged him for help, for mercy, as she writhed and twisted, grinding her back against the soft dirt at the edge of the garden. She dug down with her nails until they came out the other side of her neck, and then she ripped her own throat out. When Grandma Kathy got home, Alex was sprawled in the dirt next to a pile of black ashes, sobbing. He could smell urine and feel wetness at the crotch of his jeans, and he wanted to clean up, but he had to stay still. If there were other vampires nearby, they would be looking for their friend, and he was the only one around. They'd figure out that she was dead. They'd know who murdered her. Grandma Kathy hugged him tight, despite his wet jeans. He pushed his face into her shoulder and shivered as he told her what had happened. And she rocked him and made shushing noises until his breathing finally slowed. "Grandma Kathy, I didn't mean to..." "Of course you didn't. There is nothing wrong with you. Nothing at all. You are just like any other kid. Do you understand?" "Do we have to tell the BNT?" Alex asked.
"No."
"But everybody says that if there's a problem with fairy kind, you should call the BNT.
Grandma Kathy wrapped her hands around his upper arms. "Absolutely not. I didn't let them take your mother, and I won't let them take you."
"The stuff I read on the internet said the BNT helps people."
"The internet."
Grandma Kathy sniffed. "Listen to me, Alex. The BNT has too much power in this country. They operate without oversight. They control the media. You can't believe anything you read about them." Alex wasn't entirely sure his grandmother was correct, but she was so certain, and she always steered him right. He nodded. "I'll make sure they never find you," she promised. "But if we tell anyone about this, the BNT will try to take you away. This will be our secret, all right? This is the last time we will ever talk about it. When we walk into the house, it will be like it never happened. Promise me."
"But promise me, Alex.
This is important. You will never, ever tell anyone about this." Alex began to cry again.
"I promise."
"I can always count on you," she said, and pressed her lips to the top of his head. "Me and you, kid."
me and you. For 7 years, Alex kept the secret. He kept it right up until his grandmother died. By then, he was used to keeping it, and the urge to talk about it never hit him anymore. The only ones who attended the funeral were Alex, the couple who ran the produce store that used to sell Grandma Kathy's goat products, and some nice people from the Baptist Church on 12th Street. Alex stayed by the gravesite long after everybody left. He drove his grandmother's 15-year-old Ford XLT back to the farm. Nobody asked him if he had a driver's license. He parked the truck behind the barn. Then he sat behind the wheel and cried. The lawyers moved money around. They made sure the funeral home got paid. They made sure that the hospital bills incurred during the last weeks of Kathleen Benson's life were paid. Selling the farm and truck covered expenses. A caseworker came because Alex wouldn't turn 18 until next August and explained that Alex had paternal relatives living in Oregon. It was news to Alex. He packed robotically, picking things up and putting them down at random. He wasn't sure what to take. When he walked out the door, it would be for the last time. Someone else would have the farm, the goats, Barney and Sugar, his bedroom. Someone else would watch TV in the family room. Someone else would sit on the porch and listen to the crickets. It didn't matter what he took with him, really. In the end, he packed his computer, his favorite books, a couple changes of clothes and a jacket, the multi-tool Grandma Kathy gave him when he was 14, a tuft of goat hair woven into a skinny 5-inch braid that hung from the ring through Grandma Kathy's house key. He found out he couldn't take the multi-tool on the airplane. The caseworker arranged to have it shipped to Oregon, along with his books and computer. Alex put what remained into a raggedy backpack and took a taxi to the airport, where he boarded a plane flying nonstop to Portland. Another caseworker met him there and informed him that he would be living at his uncle Matt's house, which was in a town called Seaside on the Oregon coast. Alex was a lucky kid. The Oregon coast was one of the most beautiful places in the United States. Alex didn't expect the white electric light inside him to wake up. And in the airport terminal, it didn't. It gave him no trouble on I-205 or I-84. It gave him no trouble on Highway 26 West, until they entered the forest. Then it rose up and started screaming. Alex screamed too. He couldn't help it. He was 100 tiny eyes, seeing the world in 1,000 facets. He was 12 feet tall, and his body was unbreakable and weighed a ton, and he was furious. He was slinking along the ground and chuckling to himself, feeling the air tickle his whiskers and brush through his 3 lush, fluffy tails. He was tending a mushroom garden. He was shaking out his leaves in the sunlight and laughing. He wanted to consume flesh. Any flesh, because all there was inside him was hunger, and hunger was the only thing that made sense. The car swerved, and the caseworker shouted a swear word. "What?" he shouted. "What's happening?" "Help me," Alex croaked. "With what?" Alex was pulled under again. He could fly. He could breathe underwater. There was fire in his belly. He wanted to kill for the pleasure of it. He wanted a raw fish. Alex clutched his head and curled into a ball, the seatbelt pulling at his shoulder and pressing hard into his stomach and hip. "Are you sick?" The caseworker sounded panicked. The car slowed and then stopped, and the man shut off the engine, almost threw himself out of the car, and fumbled in his pocket for his phone. Alex prodded at the door, running his fingertips clumsily over the fabric and plastic until he found the handle. He pulled at it, shoved the door open, leaned out, and vomited. Most of it went on the ground. He thought maybe some of it went down the side of the seat, though. He felt vaguely guilty about that. "Hello?" he heard the caseworker say. "Yes, I'm on Highway 26, mile marker. I may be 10 miles past the Tillamook Junction. Listen, I've got a sick kid here. I don't know. He's screaming and holding his stomach. Appendicitis, maybe?
Alex tuned out. The priority was to get out of the car and lie on the ground, which would hopefully help with the spinning sensation. Then the white electric light erupted from his skin, expanding and expanding until it covered the car, then the road, then the trees to either side. It even covered the caseworker, but he didn't seem to notice. No, he can't see the light, Alex realized. Even if he could, I don't think he can help me. This is so much worse than last time. How many vampires are coming for me? 50? 100? Do they know what I did to their friend?
Another wave of images and sensations hit him, and Alex fell out of the car, landing sideways with his arm and shoulder in the puddle of vomit.
Winterberry, he is there, beyond the car, someone said.
The pain in Alex's head raged and pulsed. He found a patch of dirt that didn't have puke on it and pressed his forehead against it, grateful for its cool solidity.
Yes, thank you, a different voice said. I might have overlooked the nuclear explosion. Uh-oh, he's been sick. Permission to clean him up? I'll have to pull a considerable amount from the plants.
Granted. Something lifted him. So gently, he felt as if he floated. No, he really was floating. There was water beneath him. Water washing gently over his body, through his hair, removing the stink of bile and cooling his hot face. He closed his eyes, surrendering to it. There was nothing in his mind now but water. Mountain lakes that reflected the rising sun. Rivers rolling over rocky beds, bubbling and foaming. Rain falling, steady and sure, bringing the scent of green and growing things, cleansing and restoring the world. Alex sighed and fainted.
He fought his way free from dreams of the vampire woman. His mind kept circling back to her, killing her again and again. Sometimes he was floating somewhere above, watching himself kill her. Sometimes he killed her with a gun, or a bat, or a knife. Sometimes it was his nails digging into her throat. Sometimes she kept coming back to life, and he had to dig his nails into her throat over and over. He missed Grandma Kathy. She would know just by looking at him that he'd had bad dreams. Alex realized that there were people whisper arguing nearby and opened his eyes. He was in a bed that was longer than he was, something he hadn't experienced for several years. And the bed didn't creak, something he had never before experienced. There was an emerald green canopy above him. It had a fringe of gold braid around the edge and a coat of arms embroidered in gold on the part directly above his face. A tree, with some swirly designs around it. The blanket over him was soft as kitten fur, and there were piles of unnecessary pillows in his peripheral vision. Was he in a hotel? Had the caseworker brought him here? Alex tried to remember. He'd been in the car and... Oh. Alex kept absolutely still. He was still alive. Vampires would have killed him already. Wouldn't they?
He's my nephew. He should live with me, someone whisper shouted.
Alex exhaled breath he hadn't realized he was holding. Not vampires, then. He turned his head, and his eyes widened. He was in a very expensive hotel. All the furniture was carved with fancy designs and polished until the light bounced off. There were crystal vases with real flowers, and paintings that definitely hadn't come from rummage sales. There were also two elves in the room. They were wearing bright blue jackets. "He wakes," the shorter elf said, in a British accent. Alex knew him from somewhere. After a few seconds, it came to him. This wasn't any elf. This was Prince Dare, the guy who would eventually rule all the elf clans on the West Coast. He looked the same in real life as he did on TV. Straight, pale hair to the middle of his back, eyes an unnaturally bright green, and a body like an action figure. He wore a t-shirt and jeans with the blue jacket, and he was barefoot.
That's right, Alex thought,
The Cedar Prince lives in Oregon, and I think I might not be in a hotel.
Am I in trouble? He asked.
Not at all. There was a human in the room as well, also in jeans and a t-shirt, although his shirt was army green and looked like it had been ironed. He strode over to stand next to the bed and handed Alex a glass of water. Alex realized he was desperately thirsty. He drank half the glass before he came up for air.
This man's eyes are like mine, he thought, the color of blueberries.
And he has a gun belted to his hip. I'm your Uncle Matt, the man said. We were supposed to meet at my house yesterday.
Yesterday? Alex croaked.
He drank the rest of the water, then asked,
What time is it?
Around 2 p.m., Matt said.
Why are there elves with you?
Winterberry and I present ourselves as lords of the Western Monarchy, Prince Dare said. I stand also as proxy for my lady mother, Queen Siobhan of Cedar. She regrets her absence and wished me to convey her apologies. She is in Idaho, in conference with the Pine Clans.
Okay, Alex said, lost.
We stand also as two of the three CEOs of Coastal Magic Solutions, the prince said. In this role, we assist humans with fairy kind related concerns. Welcome to my home, child of Adam.
Alex stared at him. Just roll with it, the taller elf said. I'm not saying he will make sense later, but you do get used to him.
This elf also had bare feet, but his toes were webbed, and he had the build of a dandelion gone to seed. His skin was toasted wheat brown, and his mud-colored hair was in a low ponytail, although hanks of it had escaped the rubber band and stuck out like he'd just crawled out of bed. He had a long, thin nose, and ears so tall the points rose above the top of his head. And he had... Alex's brow wrinkled. That was a goatee on the elf's chin. Alex didn't know elves could grow goatees. He didn't know they had facial hair.
The one who stands beside me is my younger brother, Winterberry, Prince Dare said.
Call me Barry, the brown elf said. I'm a marsh elf. Barry was not in jeans. Under his blue jacket, he was wearing a long tunic and wide-legged pants made of some kind of off-white floppy material. It looked very cultural.
I've never heard of marsh elves, Alex said, shoving his way free of the pillow pit.
Most people haven't, Barry said sourly. History is written by the victors.
What?
Never mind. Let me repeat what Dare said, only in English. Welcome to the Cedar Crown's Palace, also known as the Lodge. You are an honored guest and can ask for pretty much anything. You can stay as long as you like.
And we would be delighted if you did.
Matt narrowed his eyes. You have not secured permission, Barry. I don't care who you are. This falls under my jurisdiction.
Alex's gaze returned to the gun on his uncle's hip. Are you a policeman?
I'm with the Bureau of Negotiation and Trade.
Alex froze.
No, it wasn't possible. He looked at his uncle. The strong jaw, the wary eyes, the rock-solid steadiness, the aura of, I will come down on you like a ton of bricks.
You're BNT? Alex said, unable to mask his horror.
Matt's look of surprise faded into resignation. I suppose you learned everything you know about the BNT from your grandmother.
Alex felt lightheaded. This might actually be worse than 100 vampires.
Panic welled up, but he forced himself to breathe normally, to keep his shoulders relaxed. Matt didn't know about the vampire woman. Alex was the only person left on Earth who did. He just had to keep doing what he'd been doing all along, pretending it never happened.
Your uncle is not just an agent, Prince Dare said. He leads the Clatsop branch of the BNT.
Alex closed his eyes.
Yeah, Matt said, running his hand through his hair. Your grandmother obviously gave you an earful. He sighed. You know, I met your mother once. Andy, your father, introduced us. He wanted to marry Isabel, but she kept turning him down. She said your grandma Catherine wouldn't accept anyone with a member of the BNT in his family. Grandma Kathy said she didn't know who my father was.
Oh, she knew, Matt chuckled under his breath. I'd been drafted into the BNT right around the time Andy and Isabel got together. Andy wasn't even allowed to park in Catherine's driveway.
That sounded like Grandma Kathy, actually.
Your mother wasn't immune, Alex, Matt said. Your grandmother wasn't. Catherine was convinced that the BNT automatically drafted all immunes. She thought Isabel would be abducted and brainwashed. Which is not, he added sternly, the case.
Am I an immune? Alex asked.
You are to an immune as the sun is to a candle, Prince Dare said.
Matt picked up one of the fancy chairs placed at strategic points in the corners of the room. He set it near Alex and sat down on it, then wove his fingers together and rested them on his stomach.
You lived in isolation, according to your grandmother's lawyer, he said, without a lot of fairy kind around.
There were no fairy kind where we lived.
Ah, Prince Dare said softly, and Barry nodded.
My guess, Matt said, is that Catherine raised you in a remote location because fairy kind were mobbing you.
I concur, the prince said.
Fairy kind magic doesn't affect immunes like your mother and me, Matt said, but that's our only superpower. Other than that, the only thing that differentiates us from other human beings is our core magic. It's brighter, more concentrated. Fairy kind are drawn to it.
He paused, then sat forward, resting his forearms on his knees.
You, Alex, are something far rarer. You're an active. One of the few people on the planet who can actually use your core magic.
Use it how? Alex asked in a small voice.
He knew what was coming. He could feel the inevitability of it.
The prince's gaze was somber as he studied Alex.
Command us, he told Alex, and we fairy kind must obey.
Red throat, Alex thought. Black ashes.
Even compared to immunes, Matt said, sympathy in his voice.
You shine like a star, Alex whispered.
Be wise, Alex, Prince Dare added.
Fairy kind know the power of the spoken word in ways you never will. Abuse your gift and you will suffer for it.
I'd prefer you didn't threaten my nephew, Matt said.
'Tis no threat, Matthew. I merely speak the truth.
Alex realized his hands were fisted. He put them behind his back and flattened them against the bed, then leaned his weight on them.
I've never heard any of this before. On the internet, on the news, anywhere.
I would hope not. It's highly classified information, Matt said wryly.
It's in everybody's best interest if the general public doesn't know actives exist. A terrorist or military power would do anything to get their hands on somebody like you. There are fairy kind out there who could single-handedly destroy a major city. And you can make them obey you.
Alex's stomach clenched.
I suspect you're one of the most powerful actives on the planet, Barry said, and a flare of amber eclipsed the dun color of his eyes, blazing and fading in a moment. I've never seen a core magic that glows like yours. It will keep pulling fairy kind toward you, even though we know how dangerous you are.
Why? Alex asked in despair.
Because even the kindest of us are monsters underneath, Barry said, with a smile that looked more feral than friendly. Our core magics desire chaos. Human core magic desires order. Your calming influence. Like insulation around an electric wire. If we taste a bit of human magic now and again, we stay sane and in control. And you are practically constructed of core magic. I'm not certain you have an upward limit.
You are light itself to us, Prince Dare said simply.
You're lucky you were raised out there in the desert, Barry added with that same dark smile. You had 17 years of peace, but things are going to change.
I had 10 years of peace, Alex thought, and then a vampire showed up.
We should talk about when you're going to move in, Alex, Matt said.
I can't say never, Alex thought. I'd have to explain why.
You cannot leave my home, Dare said.
Alex sagged in relief.
Matt, on the other hand, lowered his chin like an angry bull about to charge.
Softly, my friend, the prince said. I mean only that he cannot leave my home on the instant. While he slept, he grew accustomed to Cedar Elf magic.
I am Alex's legal guardian. Matt glared at the prince. Until my parents arrive to take him to live with them. They're overseas right now, he added to Alex. I think you might like their place. It's a ways out from the city. They have a couple of dogs, a couple of cats, and some horses. It might look like home.
That's right, Alex thought. I have a grandpa and another grandma.
Are they with the VNT? He asked, only half kidding. Matt snorted. They're retired, but Dad was a general contractor and Mom ran a catering business. I'm not going to arrest you, Alex. You haven't done anything wrong. It's not a violation of the human fairy kind accords to be inactive.
Alex swallowed.
Matt, my friend, Prince Dare said, I do not claim the boy as a hostage, but I will not allow you to destroy him. He must remain here for a time.
You didn't see what shape he was in when we found him, Barry added, leaning against the wall and crossing one leg over the other. Actives normally grow up around fairy kind. Alex needs time to acclimate.
Then, too, there is the matter of introductions, Dare said. The fairy kind of Klatsop must know what kind of human Alex is, and which powers choose to stand by his side. I have taken him into my home. In so doing, I have declared myself his ally. Winterberry, I think, will ally with him also.
I will, Barry said. That will mean a lot more to fairy kind than it does to you, Alex.
These things must be done with ceremony, Dare said. There can be no misunderstandings. Alex will be Klatsop's own, or he will be hunted. Do you understand?
Matt rubbed his face. Yeah, I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. And then, without warning, a new voice chimed in.
People so often overcomplicate things. He can form alliances with the hunters as well, Your Highness. It's permitted as long as both parties are willing. Isn't that correct, Agent Fisher?
Black smoke poured through the crack under the bedroom door, spiraled into a column, and solidified into a man. Blonde, slim, and slightly built, wearing black pants and a tailored black shirt. Skin pale and smooth as a polished pearl. He had sunglasses on. When he lowered the sunglasses, his eyes were blood red.
You've been listening to part one of A Contract in Blood on the Coastal Magic Podcast. If you enjoyed the story and want to hear part two, why not subscribe? That way you will never miss the gossip about the strange goings-on in the little town of Seaside. There are so many more interesting people to meet, and fairy kind from all around the world that you should know to avoid. The friendly folks at Coastal Magic Solutions are delighted that you stopped by. Until next time, dear listener, be kind, be well, and remember that the journey through a thousand hells begins with a single misstep.